Good.
Here we are, episode 48, process, preparation, and performance. JR, we are rolling these things out. People are tagging some awesome guests. We've got some laughter going on. We got people telling stories that I don't think they ever wanted to tell. I learned more about jalapeno-flavored dog food than I ever thought I would know from Coach Pitts down there with the hound dogs. And the information on social media is going crazy about a kid from Nixa, Jackson Campbell, about him breaking this record, about how they're going to have to make the shot put pit wider or longer at state track. We got asked that question, and then I saw it posted on social media the very next day. So, JR, you've talked a lot about state track. Tell us what you know.
Yeah, so I was even asked that how far is it? And I said, right now, it's 80 feet. So state track's obviously in Jeff City. I deal with a lot of that. And he's a sophomore. He may throw it out of the back of the thing by the time he's a senior. But he's got a lot of pedigree. I mean, he's definitely got the pedigree. But, yeah, it'll be cool. There will be where the shot put is there. It's a little hard to kind of see from the bleachers. But I've got a feeling people will be in every area around there when that kid's throwing, just to kind of check it out. And even though I'm up front dealing with the general public, I'll probably wander over that way when he's about ready to throw and just kind of check it out. But yeah, it's definitely a thing. I mean, he's going to be something to watch for darn sure.
Now, this isn't the first time that some track history has happened at Jeff City High School. A few short years ago, Devin Roberson threw the disc on the street. You know, now he's back-to-back Big 12 champ throwing the disc. And I actually happen to follow his career now when he's at Texas Tech. JR, I think the kid's going to the Olympics. Like, he is throwing the disc almost 200 feet in college. It is outstanding. So something to keep track of. But, you know, with this whole state track thing and you helping to guide everybody in, because you tell every guest to come find you, there, I don't know. I mean, how many can the stadium hold?
We have enough room. Oh, we get back, 6,000 people in there. I may meet all of them individually out front for pictures at this point, as many people we've had. And as you were talking, I was just sitting here laughing. We have changed. This started as a football podcast, and here we are introing the thing with track, for crying out loud. We've had so many track guys on lately. It's been funny. It's been funny. So
who do we have tonight?
We've got an awesome guest, courtesy of Brandon Dixon, or Brandon Pitts tagging him. We have Missouri Hall of Famer. We have a guy who's done some amazing things throughout his career, been at many different stops, one school twice, we're going to talk about when we get to there. But Coach Kurt Thompson is here with us. And Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, you mentioned that the Cantwell kid, and I've got to piggyback off that a little bit, because what a phenomenal, you know, Nixa is just about 10 miles south of where I live. So we, you heard a lot about the kid growing up. You know, I'd see some numbers that he'd put up, you know, when he was a young man throwing. Obviously, you knew about his mom and dad, or the people that follow sports do. And I just remember talking to his high school coach, who I've known, or I actually coached against when I was coaching at Webb City. But I ran into him one time last year. I said, what kind of numbers is that kid going to put up as a freshman? You know, because me, it was kind of intriguing. I threw in high school. I'll brag on myself, fairly successful, placing the state track meet, shot put, and discus. Obviously did not throw the distance that that young man has. But, you know, that was just interesting to me. Is he going to be a 60-foot shot putter as a freshman, 55? Where is it? You know, gosh. He won the state track meet as a freshman, put some unbelievable numbers up. I hadn't seen him this year, any numbers, and I was at Nixa High School with the job that I do now and visited with the track coach a little bit. And I said, is a kid injured? Because I hadn't seen any marks out. And he said, no. He said, you know, his mom and dad are both Olympians. They coach him. I kind of just leave him alone, and he wasn't ready yet. You know, in the first meet, he goes out, and I think he breaks his state record or has his PR on first meet out, I believe, at Pittsburgh State, if I'm not mistaken, in the shot put and discus. And then, you know, if you follow social media at all, you saw the young man the other day. I happened to be in that school the other day, stepped by and talked to their football coach a little bit. And, you know, there's a Division I college head coach that was there visiting, who actually is kind of a friend of mine in the coaching world. But, you know, the young man comes in and he just towers over everybody. If I'm not mistaken, a 33 ACT kid as an eighth grader. You know, so unbelievable prospect he is. But I went and watched the first game of the year this year, stood on the sideline, watched them and Webb City play. Two really good football teams just hammering out against each other, but I sit in the field level. So 3 or 4 weeks later, I just go, they play a Thursday night game. I just go up by myself, sit in the front of the press box, didn't talk to anybody, and just kind of watch that kid. And, you know, what a phenomenal football player he is. You know, Coach Perry's done a great job with that program. And that young man, it's going to be exciting to watch this, you know, just to see where he goes. You know, obviously, I would think he would pursue both sports and track, in college. There's a lot of money right now in NIL, money out there. So good for that young man and good for his parents for raising such a fine young man.
Bill and I have often talked about, you hear the hype on somebody, and when you show up to watch them, whatever they play, you expect to be able to look out there, and if they're that good, you go, yeah, that's a dude. And that can be, you know, even a girl playing a sport. It's like, yeah, that's a different level here. And obviously he is on it. You mentioned Webb City. So I'm going to lead off here with our first question. You're 23 years old and they ask you to be the head coach. What went through your mind?
Well, didn't know any difference. Jerry Kill, kind of backstory a little bit. I played college football, Pittsburgh State, played junior college for a year. You know, the old Last Chance U, Independence Community College. I don't know if anybody's watched Last Chance U, but that is what junior college football is all about. Other than the head coach, he's got a unique personality compared to everybody else. But I played there for a year and then coached later in my career in junior college football. So that's interesting amongst itself. But Jerry Kill was my position coach in high school, or excuse me, Pittsburgh State is where I played. He took the job at Webb City, offered me a job. I went with him. I was there for a year and a half. You know, I taught science for a year and a half. It's kind of interesting. I had a biology and PE degree coming out of college, but they had me teaching science the first 2 years. I remember the first year Jerry Kill went there. I didn't know any difference. We just went in and kind of started grinding it, working hard. We had started a weight program in school. This was 1988. I don't think at that time anybody else had weight classes, but Coach Kill, that was part of, he was coming. That's what they were going to do. We went 11-1. Second year, we go 14-0. So Jerry goes 25-1 in 2 years. He goes back and takes a job as the offensive coordinator at Pittsburgh State. So, you know, as much as I really enjoyed teaching science 6 hours a day, principal came down to me, said, Kurt, and this is probably one of the reasons Webb City's successful. He came down, he goes, hey, I want to move you down to the weight room. Would you be willing to do that? So I thought real hard, 4 hours of weight class and 2 hours of study hall instead of 6 hours of science. That was a hard decision. But his comment was to me, he goes, I'm worried about our kids in the weight room. He said, I'm not so worried much about the science students as I am all those football players, those athletes that Coach Kill covered every day. So I went down there, was in the weight room. You know, you went from having writing lesson plans and all that to wearing shorts to school. And at that time, I was 23 years old. You know, I wasn't much older than a lot of those kids were. But we got in the weight room, you know, and I think I told this. It's kind of funny. We went 25-1. Jerry Kill, if anybody knows Jerry Kill, he's like the Pied Piper. He can get everybody to follow him. I mean, unbelievable human being. And anybody that would ever be around him would tell you that. But principal came talk to me. He goes, hey, are you interested in that job? I said, there's no way. I said, they're going to fire the next coach that's in there. I said, there's no way that we'll keep doing what we're doing. You know, Jerry just went 25-1. So I was in the weight room. They never opened up. This was December, January, February. I was assistant wrestling coach. And I can still remember before I left, principal came and talked to me. Because the AD that talked to me the first time, who was assistant principal, principal came in and he said, Kurt, I think you need to really consider that job. He goes, it's hard to get a good head coaching job at your age. And I said, I understand. I said, all right, we'll talk. Well, I'm up the state track meet, get a phone call from Anvil Welch, who's a news sports reporter from the Joplin Globe. And he said, hey, congratulations on being the new football coach. I go, what do you mean? He said, well, they named you the football coach at the board meeting last night. So I called Tom Gosh, our athletic director, assistant principal. I said, Coach Gosh, I go, what's going on? He goes, well, oh, they started making some administrative move some people around. So they just named you head football coach. I said, okay. And I didn't think anything else about it. You know, things were a little bit different back then. There wasn't a social media, you know, and that's a whole another thing in itself. But we just, and here's what was strange. I was 23 years old. Our defensive coordinator went to be a high school or junior high principal, my offensive line coach. So when I was a head coach, I was named head coach, I was 23. Our defensive coordinator was just finishing his second year. So he was a freshman coach, played Missouri Southern, Trey Moeller. We moved him up, hired a young man named Jesse Wall, first year out of school. So there was, you know, the guys that were making the calls, you know, we had, back then, we had a big staff. There's five of us all together. You know, now we think we have to have 15 to coach a high school football team. But there's five of us, and we just kept working. And you know, very first year, very fortunate. We had some great players. They overcame a lot of poor coaching, bottom line. And we can say what we want, but you're a real good football coach if you have really good football players. We had a young man named Mark Smith, 4-year starter at University of Arkansas, an inside linebacker, all SEC linebacker. He was our quarterback. So, you know, I could make a bad play call and he'd make it look pretty good. But I'd never played on offense in college, never called an offensive play until the first football game we played. You know, we lined up against Carl Junction. I'd never called an offensive play. You know, you talk about being nervous. I heard Brandon Pitts, you guys talked to him a while back, how nervous he was. But I didn't know any difference. We just showed up. We worked hard. You know, coach our kids hard. My goodness. I look back. I mean, I'm a firm believer that you can coach kids hard. You can push them. You can coach them hard, but you got to love them hard. You know, and I still remember a kid I saw the other day, or 3 or 4 years ago, walked up to me. He played for us in 92 and 93 when we were really good. And he came up and gave me a hug. I said, Travis, my gosh. I said, if I were you, I'd punch me in the mouth before I'd give me a hug. I said, the way I used to treat you. And, you know, like any kid, oh, coach, that was the best thing you ever did for me. So, you know, it was a great experience. There 9 years, 7 years as a head coach. You know, here's where I was spoiled, and coaching is about timing. And you don't realize it till you don't have it. But the first 6 years I coached football, played in 4 state championships. We won 3 of them. I just kind of thought that's the way it was. You know, you can go there. You got good kids. You work hard. You're going to win state championships. Well, you know, I was real bright to think that was had a lot to do with me. But we, you know, I did that for 9 years. Kind of thought I wanted to pursue a good friend of mine was John Roderick. John and I played together. He's from Webb City. He was coaching at Pittsburgh State. And John and I used to talk a couple times a week. And I remember telling him, you know, he was kind of thinking about the high school deal. And I was kind of thinking, hey, I want to go follow the college route a little bit. So I can still laugh that we talked and said, hey, let's just switch jobs for a year and see what it's like. But instead, I went to Coffeyville Junior College for a year. Coffeyville Community College, was a defensive coordinator there for a year. It was a great experience, had great kids. 9 kids on our football team that year were on an NFL roster within 4 years after that. I mean, that's the kind of athletes that we had. Once again, you know, I coached a secondary. You know, I was a great corner coach, coaching that kid that played for 9 years in the NFL, following you up. So I was fortunate to be around some great kids. You know, we talk about the social media blowing up. I had a kid named Grant Wistrom during that time. Grant was recruited by every school in the country. Great football player. Very spoiled as a head coach. When I was at Webb City, I had 2 kids that were national recruits and had a lot of great high school players. But, you know, those 2 kids that got recruited by everybody in the country were my best 2 kids, my hardest working kids. It made my life a whole lot easier. So it was a great experience. You know, you ask that question and I ramble for 5 minutes about it, but I didn't know any difference. You know, I just took the job, and I still remember I went over to junior high and met with the middle school staff and one of our junior high coaches. He looked at me and he goes, you're not going to work as hard as Coach Kill did, are you? And I go, well, how could I not? You know, I said, you don't think those people believe it. But here's where Jerry Kill's pretty smart. Jerry Kill came to Webb City. He had an old yellow four-door Ford car. He would park it out on our circle drive, which is right out in front of the school on the street that everybody drives by. And Jerry Kill was smarter than he had people convinced he'd spend a lot of nights at the high school watching video. There's a lot of evenings I took him home, or his wife would come pick him up late at night, 7:38, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and I'd pick him up at 5:30 on the way back to school. And you won't believe how many people said, "My, you know, around town, Jared, Coach Kill was there all night. The last three nights, we're going to win this week." You know, and it was quite a good time. You know, Jerry made a comment in the clinic. You know, that Jerry was there. Jerry was there for 2 years. I was there for seven after. He said, "John's the only one smart enough to stay there." You know, and John has stayed there ever since. And obviously everybody in this part of the country anyway know the success that they've had. So great time, you know, good people. They've got it figured out. They know what's important. It's important to the community.
Sure. Coach, it's just incredible. I mean, it's easy to see why, you know, they selected you, even though you didn't tell them yes. They just, they're like, well, maybe we're going to do this because we know this is what he needs to be doing. That's pretty awesome. I got a question about your college days, though.
Yep.
You're there. You go to Pitt State. Your brother is at Mike, is he not?
Yep.
Your brother's playing Mike. Scott mm-hmm. Bailey's playing the other outside linebacker. God help you. Scott and I yep. are like brothers, but God help you. You guys are picked to finish last in your conference, your freshman year, and you end up you win it, don't you?
And actually, that was my sophomore year, Scott's freshman year.
Yeah.
The backstory to that, I went to junior college football for 1 year and played. Got hurt, tore tricep in my arm. I don't know how I did it, covering a kickoff. My elbow hurt, looked down, and I got a hole back there. But so I was just an average player, I'll be honest with you. My brother had played at Independence. He was 2 years older than me. He went to Pittsburgh State, started for him as an all-conference player as a junior. I was over to Pittsburgh in the summertime. I grew up about an hour and a half from there. And Dennis Franchione, and I don't know if you know that name, unless you have ties to Pittsburgh State. Coach Franchione was our head coach. At that time, he came from Tennessee Tech. If I'm not mistaken, that spring prior, they only had 40-some kids go through spring ball. Well, heck, he was offering a scholarship to anybody that even looked like they could play. I was over there one day with my brother, helped me move, and he offered me a scholarship, so I ended up going over there. So we come in, and Coach Fran had 120 or 30, but a little bit about Coach Franchione. Here's what we learned in college. I don't know if Scott would tell you, you know, as much as I coached on or played on the defensive side, and Coach Fran was nothing but an offensive coach. I say nothing. He was our head coach, but that's where he focused his time. Coach Franchione went on to be the head coach at TCU and coaching LaDainian Tomlinson. He went from TCU to Alabama, turned that job down, and went from Alabama to Texas A&M is where he ended his career up. But so we had a great person leading us. But so Scott and I came in the same year, mind you, I was a year older, and we kind of ran a 4-4 defense and three-man front. I was an outside linebacker. Scott actually played inside. Him and my brother played right beside each other. I played kind of an outside linebacker spot, and I wasn't very darn good, but I was the best we had and started every game. We went from – I don't know where we were picked. We were supposed to be terrible to where we went. We went, I believe, 11-1, won every game. We may have lost mid-season to Emporia. I think we went 9-2, but we won a conference – got into playoffs. Scott and I played the same position the next year. You know, Scott and I were friends, and then we played the same position, and him and I shared time. I didn't like Scott very well that year. He didn't like me very well because we were stealing time from each other. But, you know, what a great dude. He actually moved to tight end his junior year. It was a great place. You know, I was fortunate. You know, I mentioned Coach Fran was on offense. We got beaten in the playoffs my sophomore year, my junior year. We set the national record by most lost fumbles in a game. And that's fun playing on defense when that happened. My junior year got beaten the state – or the state. Back then, we were in NAIA then had playoffs. We got beaten the semifinals 2 years in a row. But great experience. You know, I went in to having no idea what I wanted to do in college. I grew up in a small farming community. My dad ran a sale barn or livestock auction. I was going to go be an FFA teacher. I was big in that in high school, and Pittsburgh State didn't have that. I remember talking to Bill Samuels, or my advisor, and I go, well, I guess I get a PE degree, you know. Fast forward, did that for 29 years. So Got around good people. You know, coaching's all about timing, being at the right place at the right time. And, you know, I was fortunate.
I was going to save this one for my last one, but I'm going to go with it now since you mentioned it. So you talked about growing up in Kansas, and I looked up, is it Iola?
Iola, Kansas.
Okay, so I looked up the town. Now, Coach Duke, I don't know if you did this, but correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but it's near a town called Gass.
So I had to pass Gass every year to go to school in Iola. We actually lived east of Gass. That's kind of a running joke. There's a little town called La Harpe, which is, I don't even know. We lived out in the country. But we'd go through La Harpe, pass Gass. Actually, my sister-in-law still lives in Gass today, and then go to Iola. So, yeah, that and my dad's livestock auction was in Gass City, Kansas. We had a sign, Gass, Kansas, out in front of my brother-in-law's house. You wouldn't believe how many people just stopped, take a picture beside Gass, Kansas sign. So, yeah, it's a big metropolis.
It was amazing when I was looking at it because I was like, that's got to be a typo. You know, even though everybody trusts Google Maps, so I was like, this has got to be a typo. Now, I've got a theory on Coach Duke loves my theories on people from Kansas. But you can either dispute it or affirm it. So, I think people from Kansas, they're some of the smartest people that have ever walked the face of the earth.
I agree. Totally agree.
And people from Missouri are not going to get real happy. But I'm going somewhere with this. So, okay. Coach Duke, you got to hang on. Yeah, okay. I'm going somewhere with this. So Bill and I are both from St. Louis, but I am going somewhere with this. So there's also not a lot to do in Kansas. So my theory is people from Kansas, they sit around and they think a lot. And then they want to get even with the rest of the country because there isn't much to do. But I guess my question is, what was it like growing up there? You kind of mentioned it a little bit there. Like, what was it like? What was it like?
It's God's country. That's what I tell everybody. I didn't know any different. You know, my dad ran a livestock auction, ran a sale barn. We got up, and you kind of laugh at me, but a couple of days a week went out and helped people catch cattle. That's before I was old enough to drive. We all had horses. You know, that was before four-wheelers. We'd spend a day chasing people, get their cattle loaded up. You know, it's a great thing for me. My dad was an auction. He ran a sale barn, which is where they sell livestock cattle. And then he was also an auctioneer, him and a gentleman. You know, he was a self-taught auctioneer, did that for 40 plus years. So it was he didn't work a 9-to-5 job. He worked a 7-day-a-week job. My mom worked at the bank. You know, my parents were great role models, and I saw them get up every morning, go to work. My dad worked Saturday, Sunday. We had everything we wanted. Had an older brother. There's two of us. You know, my folks taught me how to work. And I got thinking, I was telling somebody today, another coach, started working in the second grade. If you look at my Social Security statement, my dad had a sale barn and snow shovels and wheelbarrows. We scraped all the pins out. My mom would drop us off on Tuesday nights about 5:30, 6 o'clock, come back at 8:30, pick us up. And we had it all cleaned out, and I'd pick my check up. I made $11.67 every Friday. I was a rich young man when I was in elementary school and did that. My mom would pick us up after school on Fridays, drop us off at my dad's sale barn, and usually whenever we were done, 11, 12, midnight, she'd come pick us up, and that was on sale day, actually. So it was great. I mean, I loved it. We always had plenty to do. We didn't do a bunch of farming. My dad ran a bunch of cattle, but, you know, great way to live. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Coach, what, and I'm intrigued about this whole Kansas thing, and JR's questions just, they floor me sometimes because he thinks about these questions and the answers that he could get. So I think he was,
he's already doing that, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was doing it, right?
Where do you want me to go with that?
Yeah, so you, you have a very successful career, right? You've met a lot of people, you've influenced a lot of people, a lot of players. Here's what I want to know. You're going and watching football, you've coached football, you've done it at multiple levels. You tell me your opinion. What is the current state of football?
Well, and I tell, you know, it makes you a little nervous when all the concussion stuff came out, and I think it's a great place. I always tell parents, if you got young boys, you know, you still have some people a little leery, you know, with the head trauma and all that, but there is not a safer time right now for your son to be playing football. I mean, I can still remember, and you had to coach kids up a little bit. You know, if a coach, if a kid tell you he's got a headache, you got to take him out. You know, and then your trainers are handcuffed with that. I remember playing a game on Saturday at Washburn, which was in Topeka, Kansas, on a kickoff. And I remember diving for a kid. And I just remember getting hit in the head hard. Don't remember anything else about it. And my dad, I know after the game, you know, I got a concussion. I got knocked out. I mean, obviously they didn't have to cart me off the field, but my dad ended up taking me home after the game, and he said something about playing. I go, "What do you mean playing?" He goes, "You play." I go, "I didn't play any games. I just remember sitting over on the sideline. It was raining. I just remember the roar of the crowd a few times." But you know what's really weird on Saturday? No, that was Saturday. Obviously, on Sunday, watching yourself play, and you don't remember one bit of it. And I remember on Monday having to go to practice and running and tackling drills, and my head just killing me, you know. And that's now that would be your setting for 2 weeks. I think the game of football is great. I think it's needed. You know, this is me preaching because there's not very many things in kids' lives anymore. It's really hard, and football is hard. You know, we don't. I give basketball coaches a hard time. You know, well, that, you know, the heater may not be working, furnace might not be working quite enough in the gym. It might be 66 in there. It might be hot and be 75, you know, but you got to adjust one way. And you guys that are baseball coaches, here's what I've always wondered. Football, you play rain, sleet, snow, unless it's lightning. Why do they cancel baseball games when it's wet? I mean, when it's raining, why can't you play? You say, "Well, I can't throw the baseball, but we got to throw the football off." You know, I said, "What'd be interesting is playing in a rainstorm." See, anyway, I'm sure you have a little bit, but I think football, get back to the question, I think it's in a great place. I think it's needed in our society. You know, high school football, there's nothing like going on Friday nights. I go to a lot of games in these communities. I just try to go to different games and just sit back and take it all in. And I work with a company now called Adrenaline Fundraising. And the only reason I say that, not advertising for them, but gentlemen I use, I work with Sean Campbell and Travis Kimple, but I work with high school football teams, volleyball teams, what have you. And I always, you know, when I always talk to the kids, we do a little, have little meetings with them for certain things we do. And just said, "Hey, make sure you take it all in, because you all will look back and, you know, that season's going to be done. And then make sure you slow down." I always tell kids when you walk out on the field, just stop. Pause, look around, and just take it in, because you don't get that type of feeling, you know, with very many other things you're going to have the rest of your life.
You mentioned playing baseball in the rain, so I'm going to attempt to answer this. So if it's a dirt infield, party's over. Like, just think of the biggest mass chaos event you can ever think of, and that's what happens when it's dirt infield. Now, turf, I think, has changed things a little bit to where, unless it's really coming down, it looks like a monsoon or a hurricane, you can play through it. You know, you bring up a valid point. There's two things, I guess. It's age. For me, I hate being cold now. You know, if you're going to try to play baseball in 30 degrees, I'm out. I mean, I'm just not going to do it. And then the other one is I hate being wet. And so we had hosted a track meet, first one of this season. I've never been that cold and that drenched in my life. I mean, I was just miserable out there. But you know, you also mentioned time goes so fast. And I remember when we were playing state title game of baseball in 2017, and we had played in it in 2016 and lost the darn thing. And I took a second to look around
Sure.
because you have to, you know, and then you got to get to the task at hand. And then, you know, luckily we were able to host the big one, you know, but you got to look around and just take everything in. I think when you're coaching, you kind of mentioned it or playing, it's hard to do that
You
because you're
get
so
so
focused
locked
on it.
in. Yes. But
Yeah,
that's what I
it's
think
just
people
tough.
miss out on coaches. I always tell coaches that. You know, I see them every day. I go, "Man, make sure take all this in." Coach I work with, his son was a Division II, plays for Harding. He was a quarterback, actually. Chris Keelan, who's from Harrison, Arkansas. And I just sent him a text before the game and wished him good luck. And I said, "Hey, just slow down, you and your wife. Just take it all in." You know, it's just like any wedding or anything big. You look back and say, "I don't remember the fine things." I go, "Man, just try to sit back and just try to take all this in." Because, you know, those of us that are parents, I've got daughters still in college right now, but it's, you know, those things you don't. And the older I get, that stuff's more important. I mean, we all do that. We look back, you know, think of it. First year I ever coached was a head coach. You know, we played for state championship game at Mizzou, you know, get beat by Sumner team who was better than us, who we'd beaten the year before, but didn't enjoy it. You know, you show up and I still got a good buddy that used to coach in Topeka, Kansas, and he'd call me all the time. We'd talk on the phone all the time and just about, you know, couldn't want to win a state championship, want to win a state championship, just consumed with it, which we all get in. And I was fortunate a couple of those happened early in my career, but you know, he won a state championship finally and called me the next week. He goes, "Kurt, it's no different than it was before." I said, "Told you." I said, "You got so consumed in it, just make sure you enjoy it, you know, because it's great. It's great for the kids. But as a coach, you know, I still remember Jerry Kill. We won one in 1989. They'd never won one. I don't know how old the school was and opened up. You know, oh gosh, Shorty's last name came up, Coach Kill next Monday. "Hey, you think we can win again next year?" He said, "Well, Shorty, I don't know. It took us 72 years to win the first one. By God, I think we can win it again next year." You know, it's just, you know, we get expectations and fans, you know. I just, you know, the thing I struggle with, I just, you know, the social media piece, and that's a whole nother story. I'd hate to coach with that. You know what I mean? It's there's some great things about it, but you know, that brings another piece of the puzzle. So we'll
You
go on
mentioned
about
it,
that.
kind of being consumed by it. I was. I mean, it's so funny that you mentioned it because sitting right next to me here is a picture, and that's me jumping on top of everybody. And
That's pretty cool.
after that, I'm like, I don't care if I want another one. Got lucky and did, you know. But I think once you, like you said, once you get to the top, you realize what's really, it's about the kids. And you got to have the kids and the relationships. And if you get a chance, you know, after you win one, you want other kids to be able to experience that
Sure
moment.
you do. Sure you do.
You just want them to experience it and go through the things, you know, the emotions that you did, and you're bonded by it. That's for
You
darn
know, I have a
sure.
kid that played for me in 1990. He was, for better, lack of better things, kind of a special ed kid. He was on our team. I mean, he didn't play very much. I mean, he'd get in some action. So 19, that would have been the fall of 1990, and what's now 24. He calls me every 2 weeks. Probably has for 30 years, or 30 plus years. And a kid named Jimmy Lee. You know, obviously, when Webb City's winning, he's calling me. He doesn't live very far from there, wanting to make sure I'm watching this or that. But you know, they're still kids. My first quarterback ever played for me, and Mark Smith. You know, him and Jimmy Lee are the people I talked to the most out of all the kids I played for me. You know, and that was 1990. Just good people. You know, you talk about it, and here's the deal with kids, and that's why you do it. You try to help them. I've been, you know, you talk about running an emotional gamut with your players. I've been. Had to speak at a young man's funeral, had to be a pallbearer. I was the best man in one of my players' weddings. Who this is when the kid was 22 years old, lost his dad, you know. So you cover all those emotions and everything with it. And bottom line, that's what it's about. I had a coaching friend one time. He was talking about offensive football. This was before anybody was doing one back stuff. So that's how old I am. But he goes, "You know, I ran a bunch of one back stuff. I think it cost us some wins." He goes, "But I was getting bored with what I was doing, and I like the man, great respect, but that bothered me because, well, we may have lost some wins, you know." And I always tell our senior kids or upperclassmen, "You know, I'm going to coach again. You're not. It's my role. It's my job. I'm going to do everything I can do under my power for us to be successful for you. You know, I'll coach next year. You know, I've won 14 games in a row as a head coach. I won one game." Is it, well, I say 14 games a row. We won 27 in a row at one time, and we kind of went back to back at Webb early in my career. And then, like I said, I won one game to start the year off, and lost our nine straight. So, you know, all these coaches that it takes good players make good coaches. Trust me, we
Yeah.
all know that.
Right after I met Scott Bailey, we got to be friends with Jeff City, and we still talk almost every day, to be honest with you. And I remember very, very, very distinctly asking him one set of questions, and it was about winning. And I kind of knew the answer, I think, but I wanted to hear it from him. I said, "Coach, you won seven in a row. You won seven in a row. If you guys lost, you lost to CJ, and it was like national news because you lost a game there. What's it like winning not just one, but two, three, four, five, six, seven in a row? And he goes, Bill, after the first one, I was only worried about winning the second one. And I was like, we're behind. We have to start getting ready. And then very quickly it hit me in the face. You know, one of those rings fill you up. Not one of them fills you up. And I'm like, and it's kind of what I knew. And God love you, man, for I would love to win a state title. I mean, it would be incredible, you know, especially the school I'm at. They've never won one. It would be incredible. But I'll tell you, like you and getting your phone calls, I have as much, if not more, joy from talking to some of these kids that I've coached for years as winning a football game.
And just to see where their life's taking them, you know, that's what's to me. That's because it's not about, you know, Grant Western. I think I mentioned him earlier. Great high school player, great player in college. I don't know if you know much about him, but it was fit number five draft choice overall. But his dad told me one time, he goes, you know, he goes, football is just like life. You know, his dad had lost his job at that time. He just said, you know, you get knocked down, are you going to lay down? Are you going to get up and keep fighting? And that's what we always do, always tell our parents at our parents' meeting. I said, I'm not going to promise you're going to win this many games or your kid's going to play this much or he's going to get any awards. But, you know, if I can teach him about the game of life through the game of football, you know, your son will be a better young man if he goes through our program. He'll be a better dad. He'll be a better employee, better husband, you know, better son. And I think that's what we're all, you know, trying to do in the long haul. And not all of them work out perfect. You know, we have a lot of kids that still struggle, but that's why we do it. You know, if that one person, I had some very good coaches in my career that showed an interest in me you know, they were very important to my development as a young man. You know, I had a dad at home. I had a mom at home that taught me all those right things, but you know, Coach Lauren getting to chew my butt every day. And I'm sure I was a knucklehead to coach half the time, but you know, we enjoyed it. And he taught me, you know, taught me how to work.
Agreed, Coach. Agreed. JR, are you ready for the speed round?
I'm ready. I hope Coach Thompson's ready for this. I got some pretty good ones today. So I got some pretty good ones.
I'm not very creative.
Well, okay, here's the rules. You answer them all and you don't say pass or you don't go, I don't know. You can ask JR or I a question, anything you want, both of us. But the speed round works like this. We each have four or five questions. We're going to set a fake timer. There's no timer going off, but we're going to say we're setting a timer. It's kind of like that inside run drill. This is only 5 minutes, guys. The next thing you know,
10
it's
minutes,
45 minutes. So, speed
always
round.
talk about my practice schedule. I used to always tell my assistants when that horn goes off, we're done or we're starting on that time. So I'll set it at 2 minutes, especially if it's a different question.
Speed round. Question number one. If I'm going to Iowa, Kansas, where am I going to eat?
You know, it's been a long time since I've been back. I was there a couple of weeks ago. Other than Sonic, I don't know where else you go. You know, that's about the only place. No, there's a few others, but you better go by Sonic. I'd like to tell you my sister-in-law owned the liquor store across the street, but she sold it as well. So.
That's fantastic. Run or throw the ball?
Run the ball. Are you wanting to win or are you wanting to make mom and dad happy? If you want to win, you better run the ball.
Run ball. All right. So it's that first game. You've never called an offensive play. I want to know what play you called.
Outside veer, 14 veer.
Percentage of onside kicks that actually work.
Well, I would say it's a very low percentage, but neighboring school here, Ryan Cornelson's done a tremendous job at Republic, and he's recovered more onside kicks in the last year than most people have. But I never had the you know what's to call them in a game because I was always looking, what if it didn't work out?
What rule do you think should be changed in football starting tomorrow?
Nothing really comes to the top of my head because I always, I was, if you talk to officials that had my games, they thought I understood the rules. I didn't know them very well. I just kind of argued them a little bit. The roughing the, if you look at NFL's roughing the passer, obviously they have to take care of the guys that sell tickets, but that's just getting totally out of control. That's the NFL wise.
I was looking on your Twitter. What's the
Uh-oh.
best deer rifle out there?
Well, I've got Browning X-Bolt 270. I've killed one every year if you look on Twitter. That's why when you come from Kansas and you got a good place to hunt, you're going to have some success. And I enjoy that. And, I heard you ask Jeremy a couple of questions. You did say this. You were trying to talk about Brandon Pitts and Coach Dixon from West Plains. You did say Brandon Dixon. So maybe there's something in Joe Bill Dixon has been around Willow Springs too much at that time. I'm gonna have to ask Brandon Fitz about that tomorrow. I'm gonna have to call him.
There's so many names in my head. We toured Southern Missouri. I can't keep nobody straight anymore. It's sad. As soon as I said it, I'm like, oh man, that was completely wrong, and I can't edit
Those
that
guys
out.
are you. I've listened to some of your podcasts here, and what good dudes, and kind of like I told you, trying to get out of that Kickapoo loop, but Scott Phillips, the AD there, has done a great job. He has got some tremendous coaches, and I walk in there and bullets are flying. I heard you talked about Nate about lunch. My gosh, if anybody's got a weakness, they're attacking it. And I walk in the door, and my God, they have no respect for me and start throwing it back at me. So those guys have done a great job, by the way.
All right, Coach, I want you to rank some things. Are you ready? You're going to have to rank these in the order that you think they are important. Or it could be high school athletics, but let's just use football, okay? What you rank in no particular order: speed, strength, mindset, and scheme. What would be number one?
Speed,
Number two.
probably mindset,
Number three.
strength.
And then scheme at the bottom.
Well, it is, but here's the deal, and I've said this all along, it's not about the X's and O's, it's the Jimmys and Joes. If you got speed that can run, I would love to have a bunch of good offensive linemen, but if you I know we chased around Doriel Green Beckham a bunch when he broke the national receiving record. Hell, we never caught him. And if we could, we couldn't tackle him anyway. So that's kind of where I say speed first. But we won a lot of football games. I had a kid that was a good tailback for me, rushed for 1,300 yards. And he ran a 5.240. Everybody said, oh, he's too slow, he can't play. You're right, he's too slow, he can't play, but he rushed for 1,200 and some yards. So scheme is not overrated. There's a lot of good schemes. You can run a 5.2 defense, 4.3 defense, whatever it is you want to run, you can throw it, you can run it. There's, schemes are good, and there's a lot of sound schemes, but what can your kids do and what do your kids believe in? That's when you talked about mindset. We had a lot of kids we won a lot of games with that if people to come and watch this practice or looked at them, they'd have thought that they weren't very talented, but you got to convince them that they can win and put them in a position to be successful.
I'm sitting here trying not to laugh because this question is such a polar opposite from that. It's just going to be comedy hour around here. Okay, I always try to come up with a funny one before my last one. So, do you think we actually landed on the moon?
I
It's
think I've
JR.
seen video of it, right? Huh?
Yeah,
Is there
yeah.
something else behind that? I think we did.
No.
What year was that?
69.
69.
So see, I was 3 years old. Oh, I'm sure I did. Yeah.
69. Okay, my last question.
That is kind of an off-the-wall question, by the way.
Yeah. My last question. What movie, when it comes on TV, no matter how many times you've seen it, you keep watching it?
Shawshank Redemption.
Hmm.
Anytime it comes on, and I don't like watch. You ask some questions, I'm not going to be able to answer very many of those because I've got a very, I'm very simple minded, trust me.
Me too.
That movie, for some reason, when it comes on, you're flipping through channels, and my wife harassed me all the time. When I was a kid growing up, we had ABC and NBC, we had two channels. And I still remember being deprived as a child, which we didn't watch TV much. I can still remember we had some guy come out and work on our television. We had Channel 7 and Channel 12, ABC and NBC. And he did some work, and there was this UHF station or something, and that was CBS. And that was like when I was 15 years old, and I felt like I got cheated out of 15 years of my life getting cheated out of not knowing what was CBS even was, you know, and that was, you know, that's how simple we came from.
So this question's kind of been a tradition to finalize the speed round. You got to pull off a museum heist, and you can take three people with you to do this. So who are you taking and why are you taking them?
Well, and I thought about this because I did a little homework on you guys. And the first guy I would take was a guy named Jerry Kill. And here's the reason I say that, if you know him. And those of us that do will understand this. If Jerry Kill spent 10 minutes in there, he's going to have all those people convinced they ought to just give it all, hit everything to us. And that is true. I mean, that guy could tell you the sun wasn't going to set tonight and everybody believed it. I mean, that's just kind of the way he is. He can convince anybody to do anything. And the second person would be Bob Shore. And here's the reason I say Bob Shore. I don't know if you know much about Bob Shore. We used to play him when I was at Camden. And Bob, for some reason, liked me. I think he liked me because I answered the phone. We would spend a lot of hours on the phone. And on a serious note, there wasn't very many decisions my first 3 or 4 years as a head coach that I didn't run by Bob Shore. There was him and a gentleman named Larry Garman. And both those guys were, well, about the end of their career. And I mean that seriously about Bob, but we'd be playing Bob and we'd talk on the phone that week. I mean, if I had a problem or discipline issue, I'd run it by Bob and we'd kind of talk everything through. He'd kind of been there and done that. And he took me under his wing, and Bob and I can talk and we can solve everybody. I guarantee you, we could figure out how to win games at Tipton if we just come watch a game. We'd tell you how to do it. We could probably figure out how to do your job better at Jeff City. I'm an expert now that I'm out of it. I mean, I've got a couple of coaching friends and we laugh, we talk on the phone, you know, after, my God, I mean, we could fix everybody's problems if they just listen to us. And then the last person I'd take was a guy named Doug Bullard. A lot of people, if they know me, know Bull. He coached offensive line for us at Webb City, came to Kickapoo with me and then at Republic. And here's why I would take Bull with me and probably Bob at this point in my career. I can outrun both of those guys still. So if all hell broke loose, they're going to catch those two guys, and it'd take four or five of them to get Bull to the ground. So I'm off and free. I think I could probably outrun Bob now, not when he was younger, but I could then. So anytime you get in trouble, you just have to, for whatever reason, if somebody's chasing, you just got to be faster than one guy you're with because they're going to catch him and have to worry about him. So I can't run very fast, but I could guarantee you I could outrun Bull.
I like it. I like it.
Perfect.
I like it.
Coach, it's been absolutely outstanding. You've been it for a while now, and JR and I say the oldest game ever played was tag. So if you were playing tag with a bunch of other people and that per the person you tag had to be on this show, who would you tag and why?
And here's why I say a guy named that took my job, a good friend of mine, John Roderick at Webb City, who, you know, people, what he's done at a school I was at and continued doing that. And I don't know if you talk to John, he won 15, 16, heck, I don't know, maybe more than that. But to stay at one place to do what he did year in and year out, it's just been fascinating. John and I played together. In each other's weddings. I mean, he's a good friend of mine, and that's what the first year I left Webb City, I was coaching at Coffeyville. I'd talk to him every Friday night after the game. They went 14-0. He won his first state championship the first year he was there. Continued doing what he's doing. He's staying on as the athletic director at Webb City last night. And if you do talk to John, you know, here's what's unique about John Roderick, those of us that know him. John, I guarantee you the first dollar that he made at Webb City, he's probably got 95 cents of it still left. I mean, he's as tight as there is, and we harass him about that. He showed up in Springfield the other day. He said, Kurt, this was 2 year ago last summer. He goes, I want to go look at a car. This was during COVID. And his poor wife, he goes, I want to go look at this car. So my 16-year-old daughter and I, we met him up there. And he goes, he bought a car. I mean, we go test drive it with him. And he goes, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to take your other car home. I'm going to park at my house. You're going to drive that home to your wife. And it's an hour and a half from here. And he called me afterwards. He goes, I've never done anything like that in my life. He said, usually I, you know, run it through my mind for time after time after time. But so he's coming out of that, have his shell just a little bit. But good friend of mine, obviously tremendous football coach. I had opportunities to go coach at the collegiate level for years, but talk about just making a great influence on young men. He's done that, let alone success, but you know, been there for a lot of them.
So Coach, we kind of got excited and forgot. Is there any questions you want to ask us?
Well, I didn't forget.
You know, and just like, you kind of want to let that go. I don't have anything to embarrass you. I guess I should have called, you know, I didn't do my homework that I didn't. I probably should have called Scott Bailey and find some things to ask both of you guys. And if we can get back on this, if I put you on pause for a couple minutes, I'll do that. But, you know, just the same thing I ask other people, you know, why do you go into coaching? You know, Coach Duke, you know, here's a great question for you. You know, you're a surgeon and you coach high school football. Why? You know, and I think you answered that a little bit ago. We had a little bit of small talk ahead of time, but I'm curious to know that. And JR, you know, you're out of coaching now. Who led you guys down that path, I guess,
yeah,
for both of you?
Well, I'll tell you the why behind medicine and the why behind coaching and how they intersect. So my grandmother had diabetes, and she lived in South St. Louis. She found out she had diabetes in the parking lot of the grocery store. They said, "Ma'am, we're doing these tests for this new disease process that's out. Would you mind? Do you want to do it?" And she said yes. Now, keep in mind, my father and my uncle were both born at like 12 and 13 pounds. They were just large babies. They're not big humans. They were just large babies because she had diabetes, right? So she found out in the parking lot of a grocery store that she had this new disease, diabetes. At that time, insulin, you know, I remember her storing her insulin in the refrigerator. There was NPH and there was regular, and she had to have it at certain times. Because of the diabetes, and we didn't know everything that we know now, she lost both of her legs, both of them. Mm. My grandfather, a very good businessman, never really had any formal schooling, but taught himself how to do business, taught him how to do painting and sandblasting. And I would go down there and I would work for my grandfather and spend several weeks a summer with them. And my grandmother, after losing both of her legs because of diabetes, would put on a pair of carpet layer knee pads and climb the stairs every day and do every single chore in that house and never once bitched about her process in life. Instead, she said, "You know what, Billy, you get one set of these legs, you got to take care of them. And if you don't got them," you know, she was a very religious woman. She never complained about it. So sure. I remember pushing her down the street in her wheelchair with the butt of a gun sticking out it to protect us in case something happened. But she never complained, not once, not ever. And I thought, you know what, if I could do this and maybe help somebody along the way so they don't have to do that or be put in that position, man, that would be pretty cool, right? That would be pretty cool. And sports, I had a lot of good coaches, men who were incredible, ones that to this day I'd probably run up and hug, and they were as hard as hell on me, you know?
Sure.
But the career I chose was foot and ankle, so there's not too many sports that don't involve your foot or your ankle. So even if I wasn't blessed to get to coach, I would still get to be involved somehow, some way.
Yep.
That's the why. That's the why the reason why I chose what I chose and the reason I continue to do it. So,
Coach Thompson, you'll kind of find this interesting with me. I'm sitting here thinking about it. I've never really thought about it. Some of the memories that I remember with sports early on, my aunt, because I lived in St. Louis, would come pick me up because her friend knew somebody who was head of the will call desk for the St. Louis Blues. So anytime they had tickets they knew were going to be available, they called my aunt. She'd come out to Eureka, pick me up, and take me down to where that's where I kind of remember it, just like anything that early with sports. You probably find it really interesting with me. Never played high school football, never played high school baseball, just kind of a self-taught, self-learned person who's luckily got enough intelligence just to figure things out. You know, when I first got into it, baseball, geez, it was early 2000s, and started coaching in the feeder program here at Jeff City, and then ended up, you know, over time on the high school staff, running the feeder program, being the assistant head coach, and been lucky to be around a lot of people. And then from the AD standpoint, I've been in that office. This is year four now. Kind of interesting what you were like. I get bored with things. We've kind of mentioned it on here before. As soon as I start to kind of start figure things out, I want to move on to something else. And so I was lucky enough. I met Bill out of Blair Oaks when he was out there, and a friend of ours, Terry Walker's the head coach there, and that's where we kind of know each other. And I was basically doing a lot of film work there, and then kind of worked up to helping with positions and whatnot. And then we all got a chance to come back over to Jeff City. But it's kind of I'm kind of like an anomaly, I guess, to where it's never really played much in high school, was very interested in hockey, and then moved to Jeff City in 86, and there wasn't any ice arena with a roof on it, for crying out loud. I still remember it, but it is, I think you kind of illustrate a good point. Everybody's got a different path there to how they end up there. And mine is definitely more eclectic than most. But it, boy, it sure worked out. That's for darn sure.
That's what I used to always, sport, and I don't care what sport it is, football. If it wasn't for football, my brother and I were the first two people in our family to get a college degree, and we both got football scholarships. If it wasn't for that, I don't know what I'd done. I probably wouldn't have gone to school, but that was an avenue to get out, and then you just kind of fall in love with it and work your tail off, and you see good things. And I like the physical aspect of it. I mean, that was me. My brother used to beat the living hell out of me all the time. He was 2 years older than me, so I could go out there and be protected a little bit and do the same thing. But that's why I used to always tell parents, get your kids involved in something. I don't care if it's give them a reason to go to school. And I saw towards the end of my career, the beginning of my career, I felt like we saved a lot of kids by getting them in our programs. I don't mean saving them, but gave them a reason to come to school every day. If they didn't come to school, they couldn't practice. If they didn't practice, they couldn't play. So that was one avenue just to get them interested in doing what we all thought they needed to do as far as showing up every day and teach them some accountability and some responsibility. So, I know it served a great purpose for me. I've lived a great life and I feel very fortunate because of that.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Coach, this has been outstanding.
Appreciate you guys.
Coach Bailey told me you were going to be a great guy.
I've got a lot of secrets on him, by the way. Thank goodness there weren't cell phones back when we were in college. None of us have jobs today, so probably don't get truth to that.
Oh, so it, yeah, that is true. Scott's ability to do technology is, I'm not going to say it's limited because he's a super intelligent guy. It's just his cell phone. Well, it's kind of like his truck. I mean, if you ever seen his old truck, I mean, it's kind of the same way. So,
Sure, that gets done what he needs to do.
yeah, that's right. It goes from A to B. That's what it does, and he takes pride in that. So, it works out
Poor
okay.
Scott. I mean,
Yeah.
it's the same guy that counted the amount of stairs from the football field to the AD's office at Jeff City and remind me every other day. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Think about this a little bit. So John and I and Scott all played together. And there's a guy named Blaze Bauer that played. He coached when the era that we played together, there was a ton of coaches from our football team. I was fortunate to
Yeah.
win three. God doesn't compare to what Scott did and John did. We're on the same team together, and so we had some great coaches and mentors that kind of, taught us how to work hard. And then, a lot of it has to do with luck. Lamar Scott didn't have any luck when he started out. It wasn't his first year or the second year. They were 0-10, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Lamar and won what 7-8 in a row. I mean, it's just a great
Well,
time. So,
I think it just goes to show that linebackers make the best coaches.
no, we're the smartest.
JR, we're rolling here. Coach Roderick has been tagged. We'll see if he'll come on the show there. That'd be good. I think what we may have to do one time, JR, we might have to have like a Pitt State reunion on our podcast here and get all these guys on. We might only have to just ask one question, and the next thing you know, we're going to get
We'll
all
just sit here.
We're going to get all those.
No, if we all three got together, we'd all three be real quiet because there's some things we don't need to get out. And I've got more dirt on. I guarantee you I got more dirt on John Roderick when you get to that. We can set him up some really good questions if he comes on.
That'll work.
Coach, I think Coach Thompson here needs to write the speed round for Coach Roderick. I think
that would be funny. That could be a new thing here. Whoever tags the guest gets to write.
I couldn't do that.
JR, it's been great. Coach Thompson, thank you for your time. We certainly appreciate it. For process, preparation, and performance, I'm Duke. He's Simmons. God bless people. Have a great night.
Appreciate you guys.